if you're a songwriter, you haven't made it until your songs are recorded by a great act other than yourself. And in this particular case, Woolly Bully was recorded by the Chipmunks. I have Sam the Sham on the phone to give us a review of that. Are you familiar with that Chipmunks recording?
Oh, yeah. They even have a chipmunk doll that you squeeze their paw and it starts singing it.
It was actually used, I believe, in a movie called The Chipmunk Adventure. I am pleased, ladies and gentlemen, to present my guest of honor. His real name, Domingo Samudio, from Dallas, Texas, originally. Where are you from right now?
In Tennessee, Memphis.
Initially, when you were performing, did you actually have a group called the Pharaohs before you were performing as Sam the Sham, or did Sam the Sham come first?
The Pharaohs came first. I was actually working with Andy and the Night Riders.
Was this in Dallas?
Well, no, that was in Louisiana, Leesville, Louisiana.
Was this the early 60s?
Yes, 63.
Now, what kind of music were you doing? Did you have a name for the style of music?
We were just doing roadhouse music, R&B, primarily blues.
Okay.
And some rock and roll, but it was the roadhouse.
So now this is before Woolly Bully came along, of course.
Right.
You just had the Pharaohs, and you play the organ?
Yes, I did.
Were you writing your own material at that time?
We were just performing. I was writing some, but I wasn't the leader of the band. There were four of us.
Right.
And we just played blues songs and rock house songs. It was just typical early 60s music.
You were working at a club called the Congo Club?
That's correct.
I have the names of Andy and the Night Riders, Andy Anderson and David A. Martin and Vincent Lopez and, of course, you. How did it occur that you became the Sham? Sam the Sham, for that matter.
Well, I was in a virtuoso on the organ. I used it more or less like a rhythm instrument and played triads, and people used to walk up to the organ and say, play some Jimmy McGriff. And, of course, I couldn't. And I'd tell them, man, I can't play the organ. I'm just, you know. And, of course, they thought that I was just jacking with their heads. And they'd say, you just don't want to play my song, man. You know. And the leader of the band started calling me a sham. So he'd introduce me as the Sham, Sam the Sham. So I've always believed when life gives you lemons, make lemonade.
Ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear several witticisms from Sam the Sham this evening. That was the first one. At any rate, you became Sam the Sham, and the name the Sham at that time was not meant as a compliment. It was a description of your ability or lack thereof.
Inability.
In June of 1963, you headed for Memphis, Tennessee, and you were working at a club there called the Diplomat.
That's right.
And in the late summer of that year, you had some changes in personnel. I believe that Andy Anderson and Vincent Lopez left the band. Then
Vincent went to Texas, and Andy went back to Louisiana.
You and David then got some replacements. And one of them was Jerry Patterson?
Correct. He was a drummer.
You also brought in Ray Stinnett?
Correct.
Guitar player?
Right.
And eventually you brought in a saxophonist by the name of Butch Gibson?
Yes.
And you officially changed your name to Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs?
Yeah. I've got a website.
Oh, let's plug it.
It's www.samthesham.com, and it has parts of a book that I'm working on.
Now, what everybody wants to hear, including myself, we want to hear the story of Woolly Bully. I remember Maddie told Hattie about a thing, and it was two big horns and a woolly jaw. How did that come about?
Well, we were in a studio, and they kept pitching songs that really wasn't us. We're primarily a blues band. So the producer, Stan Kessler, said, well, do you have anything? And I says, well, we'll make something up. And I counted it off. We were studio weary. The band was getting kind of weary, and we kicked it off. I kicked it off in Tex-Mex, and it just blew the producer away. And he says, you have any lyrics? I says, yeah, I'll make some up, because we did that as well. That's another reason they called me the Sham.
Because of the lyrics you made up?
Well, the monotony of playing 6 hours a night in a roadhouse, a lot of times, just to break up the monotony, I just tell the band to start playing a progression. I just take my time and make some rhyme, keep everybody from losing their mind.
Is that how Woolly Bully came along?
Yeah.
Did you actually, as you were writing it, I mean, you're talking about two big horns and a woolly jaw. Was there a creature that you were actually envisioning as you were writing the song? Or
No, you just make it. I mean, you just make up, I don't know, how can you explain madness?
So in other words, the song doesn't really make a lot of sense.
No, it's not steeped in profundity. It's just when you work 6 hours a night, you know, and it's after hours. We went from 10 to 4 in the morning. And, I mean, you play that long, you don't even have to speak anymore. You know what you're going to do when you're playing. And you become familiar with one another.
When you wrote Woolly Bully, you remember how long it took to write the song? Did you write this just in a few minutes?
We just sang the lyrics in 3 takes.
But I mean, you had something down on paper, right? I mean,
nah.
No? It was you actually ad-libbing this? You actually were ad-libbing as you were singing? Basically?
Sure.
Wow.
Did 3 takes. All of them are different.
Now, one thing before I play the record, I want to mention the line that some people might not understand, and that is, let's not be L7. Could you explain what L7 means?
If you write an L and then put a 7 up against the L, it makes it a square.
So when you say, let's not be L7, you're saying, let's not be square.
Yeah, don't be lame, you know.
Okay.
Square, don't be a dud.
We're going to listen to this record right now, and then I'm going to tell you some interesting facts about it. Ladies and gentlemen, Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs, Woolly Bully, and it begins with the countdown that probably was not supposed to be part of the record.
Uno, dos, one, two, tres, cuatro.
Am I correct? The countdown was not really supposed to be part of the take.
Well, it wasn't. I argued with the producer, engineer, Stan Kessler, not to leave it on there. But he said, man, that's great. That sets the whole thing up, man. That's exciting. we debated, and I gave in, and it's a good thing, because the minute it kicks it, man, everybody heads for the floor.
Absolutely.
Jerry Lee Lewis, a good acquaintance of mine, one of the finest gentlemen in the business along the way, uses it. I've been told, I was driving to Key West about a year ago, and somebody called me from the Memphis in May Festival, and they were, Jerry Lee Lewis was playing down on the river, and this friend of mine called me and he says, "Listen, Sam, Jerry Lee Lewis is being brought on with Wooly Bully, and I know his band, B.B. Cunningham, is the bass player, and Jerry Lee Lewis had requested that." That was quite an honor to me, because I think Jerry Lee is one of the greatest gentlemen. You hear a lot of stories about him, but he is a gentleman, I tell you. He's real. And when we came to Memphis, I was in a nightclub one night, and I wasn't anybody, but he had just done a concert, he and Charlie Rich and somebody else, and they were at a table, and it was about 4 in the morning, 4:35, and I'd come in to this club, and I just sat by myself. I seldom went out at night, but I just went out that night, and I was sitting alone, and Jerry Lee sent his road manager over there and said, "Jerry Lee came over here to ask you if you would like to join them at the table." So I went over there and I met him. I knew he was from Faraday, Louisiana. Among other things, he's always been very civil and very, very much a gentleman. I was fortunate enough to be invited to his Lifetime Achievement Award reception at the Grammys year before last.
Wooly Bully on the Billboard chart, amazingly, only got to number 2. That was its peak position. However, for the year-end chart, which is based on all 52 calendar charts for that year, it turned out to be the number 1 record of the year, 1965.
Yeah, that's quite an honor. I mean, I knew that back then, and it was exciting. But we had planned it. People say, "Did you ever believe?" Yeah, I believe. That's what I set out to do. I don't know. People think I'm nuts, and it really doesn't make any difference what anybody thinks. They can't guarantee me the next breath or the next heartbeat. I love life. It has its bumps. And people say, "Well, it was terrible and all of this," and they get bitter. You can get bitter or you can get better. A famous engineer, producer on a famous label here in Memphis sat down with pencil and paper, and he said, "I'm going to show you mathematically what your odds are." And he sat down and calculated that my odds were 9,000 to 1 to get a gold record.
In other words, 9,000 that you won't and 1 that you will.
Yeah.
And you sold over 3 million records, right?
Oh, yeah.
And you proved right off the bat that there was life after Wooly Bully with a song called Juju Hand. I know that you're a no-nonsense guy, Sam, but I don't necessarily know if that has to do with some of the lyrics you've written. I mean, I have a sample here. "I got a Yokomata Hoopa Bakta Juju Hand. This Yokomata Hoopa Bakta sure is grand." Did I do that halfway decent?
Well, actually, it's a code for the profound calculation of the balance of the... You're not really going for this, are you?
I don't know if I understand. I don't quite... You're putting me on here now. Next thing you're going to do is you're going to tell me that this is part of the Einstein theory or something.
There you go. Okay. Now we have breakthrough here. That's the whole thing.
I'm wondering, are you digging yourself a hole or am I digging the hole by not understanding you? I don't really know, but...
Oh, man. In the Tarzan movies that say, "Juju," and my cousin, whose name's Sam, he'd make up lyrics and he'd say, "Yokomata, Bakwa," and all of that, and I'd say, "Okay, I'll just throw these in there," and, you know, if you listen to the lyrics, that's the way it goes.
Does this make as much sense as ooh-ee-ooh-ah-ah, ting-tang, walla-walla-bing-bang?
There you go. I understand that.
Oh, okay. All right, I'm just going to play it, and we'll let our audience decide what it means. This got to number 26 on the chart. This is Sam the Sham of the Pharaohs with Juju Hand.
Yokomata, hula like what you do. Ow! They got it. I
The Sham and the Pharaohs, you all understand what that means, so we're going to move right on to the next record, which makes a lot more sense. It's called Ring Dang Do. Actually, Ring Dang Do is not one that you wrote. It was written by Joe Byers and Bob Toubert. And I listened to the recording, and if you take away the dang do, he's talking about a ring. I mean, like a real ring. So it makes a little bit more sense.
Man, if it makes sense, I've failed.
Oh, gee, but you didn't write it.
No,
you just
sang it. I performed it.
Okay. And this was the follow-up to Juju Hand, Ring, Dang, Do.
Well, you can have your gold and your diamonds, too. All I want is a ring, dang, do.
Sham. and the Pharaohs. Well, you had three hits, but you needed another one. You needed kind of a rock'em sock'em hit once again to kind of rival Wooly Bully. You had a recording that came out, I guess, around April, I would estimate April or May of 1966, called Little Red Riding Hood. Is that a song that you wrote, or did somebody else write that one?
Somebody else wrote it. I think it was Ron Blackwell.
What was your reaction when you first heard the song? Did you say, hey, I really want to record this?
No. I thought, man, you know, I really don't. And they said, man, you got to try it. So I thought, okay, well, I'll do it tongue-in-cheek and get into it. I mean, I like it. It just kind of grows on you. During that time, I guess everybody was beginning to get super heavy and profound, you know. It was a crazy time in the 60s, and I just thought I didn't have anything to protest. Shucks, man.
You are not doing Eve of Destruction.
I could care less, man. You know, well, don't get me started. The way you start changing things is by being open to change yourself, you know. We live in a great country. I tell you, a lot of people put it down, but man, you go anywhere in the world, and you don't have to go very far to realize that we may not be perfect, but we're so far ahead of whatever is number two. That's another reason they call me the Sham, because when I get serious, I'm super serious, you know. I live a life of love, and I love the life I live. I didn't come to take, I only came to give.
You recorded Little Red Riding Hood kind of tongue-in-cheek.
It has everything to do with Little Red Riding Hood.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, get into the character. The wolf, I mean, he's trying to convince this Little Red. I'm not so bad after all once you look past my nose, you know. It's tongue-in-cheek. It's not naughty. And can't you just visualize? I mean, that's how I did it. I just saw this wolf, man, and he's strolling along, you know.
Well, it's not naughty, but if people in their own minds want to make a song naughty, they could make any song naughty.
Of course.
I mean, it's
out there. However it affects you, apparently it affected 1.5 million.
Oh, yeah.
It's still going. I mean, somebody just brought me a stuffed wolf. Mm-hmm. He squeezed his paw, and he howled and started singing Little Red Riding Hood.
Could you do a howl right now to introduce that record?
Sure.
Okay, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to hear a record that got to number 2 in Billboard, actually made number 1 in Cashbox, and it sold 1.5 million copies, and now Sam the Sham is going to introduce it with a real live howl.
Ow! Who's that I see walking in these woods?
Why, it's Little Red Riding Hood. Hey there, Little Red Riding Hood. You're all looking good. You're everything a big bad wolf could want.
Listen to me,
Little Red Riding Hood. I don't think little big girls should go walking in these spooky old woods alone. Sheep suit on until I'm sure that you've been shown that I can be trusted walking with you alone. Oh, Little Red Riding Hood, I'd like to hold you if I could, but you might think I'm a big bad wolf, so I won't. Bye.
That was Lil Red Riding Hood. If you Google it, it's LIL'. I understand that you do motivational speeches.
Well, people call it motivational. I like to encourage people. There's a sort of a culture of putting people down, man. I used to go through that as a kid. I was a runt in high school. But I like to build people up, man. The glass isn't half empty, it's half full. When I speak to musicians that come to me and want to know if I can use them, I ask them, are you any good? And they'll say, well, I don't, you know, okay, get out of here. If you don't know, why should I believe you, you know? There's a musician by the name of Wayne Perkins, excellent guitarist. I met him in Alabama at a college. He was part of the band, and he was 14 years old at the time. And I hooked up and got ready to play my guitar, and I looked around to see if the band was ready. And, man, he looked like he was in a gunfighter stance. Man, he had his guitar, and his eyes were locked on me. And I thought, man, this guy's ready. He went on to be one of the greatest guitar players. Wayne Perkins is his name. A lot of people don't know that I won a Grammy. I was nominated for a Grammy in 3 times.
Which one did you win?
Liner notes for an album, Sam Harden Heavy, as an annotator. I was up against Miles Davis, who was a great artist, and musically I couldn't carry his horn case. But as a writer, as an annotator, the liner notes, I came away the winner.
Going to close with one that has probably become my favorite Sam the Sham record. It's one that was written by Dwayne Blackwell, who also wrote the song Friends in Low Places for Garth Brooks, and also Mr. Blue by the Fleetwoods. And it's called Oh, That's Good, No, That's Bad, with the Shamettes, by the way.
That was Fran Curcio, Lorraine Gennaro, and Jane Anderson. Beautiful, beautiful girl. Telling you.
Sam, the best to you. Oh, that's good. No, that's bad.
That's what he gets for believing the 9,000 to 1.
Yeah. Good night, Sam.
Good night, Ron.
Oh, that's bad.
No, that's good.
Money that I've seen in the years payroll. Oh, that's
That's the show. And now, a couple of bonus tracks by Sam the Sham and the Pharaohs. First off, we have The Hair on My Chinny Chin Chin.
Who's there?
Oh, it's me again.
I'll huff and puff and pull your little house down. You hid your heart in a house of brick and locked all the doors and windows. I've already used a whole bag of tricks. I can't find a way to get in though. You don't want to let a new love start, so you put a brick house around your heart. But I'm gonna keep hanging around till I huff and puff and blow your little house down.
Now let me back up and get me a good breath.
I swear by the hair on my chinny chin chin, I'm gonna find a way to get in. I'm gonna keep hanging around till I huff and puff and blow your little house down.
Now, Little Red Riding Hood, I know you're in there. Tell him Little Pig to open up the door.
Your heart was broken once before. Now my heart can't get near you. I'd like to make up for his mistake, but another love just scares you. You don't want to let a new love start, so you put a brick house around your heart. But I'm gonna keep hanging around till I huff and puff and pull your little house down.
Now listen, Little Pig, I'm gonna let you off the hook if you open the door now.
I swear by the hair on my chinny chin chin, I'm gonna find a way to get in. I'm gonna keep hanging around till I huff and puff and pull your little house down.
All right, I warned you now. Oh, me. If Grandma hadn't run me so bad, I wouldn't be so out of air. Now come on, Pig. Open up his door.
And finally, here's How Do You Catch a Girl.
Won't somebody tell me